It's Friday, May 30th, and it's 420 summer in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com.
Well, hello, Stashers. I'll tell you what, it's really good to be back here at Normal West Coast Media Headquarters in beautiful Portland, Oregon. As you know, if you've been reading the Stash blog, my alter ego, corporate trainer man, was out there in Helena, Montana, in the middle of Big Sky country, teaching people how to use computers. And unfortunately, some technical difficulties prevented me from being able to record Stashes while I was out on the road, so I hope you haven't missed me too much, and I know I've missed you, but good to be back here bringing you the news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. We got a lot of news stories to catch up with today, so we'll bring those to you first in our hemp headlines. Then coming up in our musical break, we've got the Tall Brothers coming back with some more reefer jazz to take us into the weekend. And finally, we'll finish out with a replay of the full interview with Tommy Chong from a few weeks back when the warehouse was busted in Ohio that had all the copies of his movie, a.k.a. Tommy Chong. So stay tuned for that, and thank you for waiting patiently for your stash fix, because this is your normal daily audio stash.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines.
Oregon Supreme Court rules moving marijuana illegal. Portland, Oregon. Helping a friend move a few plants to his new house can get you into trouble with the police if they happen to be marijuana plants. The Oregon Supreme Court ruled Friday that a man who helped his friend move things could be convicted on marijuana possession charges. Thomas Fries argued he should be acquitted because he was acting at his friend's direction and just helping with the move when he loaded the plants in his SUV. But the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that physical control of property is sufficient to prove actual possession. The court noted there are exceptions in the law that permit people to possess marijuana in limited situations, but this was not one of them. Now, this is the way the story reads from the Associated Press, and I've seen it picked up in a couple of media outlets already. One website, The Seattleist, in a post entitled, "Thank You, Your Judicial Obviousness," mocks the decision, writing, quote, "It took the Oregon State Supreme Court to decide that? Surely a lower court could have easily ruled on this decision, ending it with a duh," end quote. Well, I'd like to remind The Seattleist that indeed, a lower court did make that decision. Supreme courts take up cases that are being appealed. It does seem like a story worthy of satire when all you read are the AP's five short sentences. The Seattleist went on to say, quote, "After Fries made his case in court, we hope a judge quipped, 'Son, you must have been smoking some of those plants to think that argument would work.'" However, as is the case with many of the marijuana stories in the media, important details are being glossed over.
In this case, the fact that the man convicted was helping his friend, who was a registered medical marijuana patient in the state of Oregon, and had every legal right to be in possession of those plants, and had every legal right to move those plants to his new home. He just had the sorry luck to get evicted, which happens often to patients when landlords kick them out for their legal choice of medicine, and even worse luck that he didn't have a vehicle to move his medicine. So now his friend, Thomas Fries, is convicted of possession of marijuana and sentenced to 5 days in jail, a $500 fine, and 18 months of probation. That's the punishment for his crime of helping his disabled friend in time of need. Now, you can read more about the case description from the Oregon Supreme Court decision. I've got it posted up at the Stash at stash.normal.org. Vermont governor won't veto new hemp law. First, the good news. Montpelier, Vermont. Governor James Douglas will allow a bill legalizing hemp to become law, despite concerns from the law enforcement community about its impact on marijuana eradication efforts in the state. The legislation, which legalizes the cultivation of industrial hemp in Vermont, won nearly unanimous support in both the House and Senate this session. Though Douglas doesn't support the bill and has refused to attach his signature to it, he will nonetheless forward the legislation to the Secretary of State, which will effectively enact the law. But Tom Tremblay, Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, said he worries about what the legislation means for law enforcement officers in Vermont if the federal law does change. Quote, "The plants are really difficult to differentiate," Tremblay said. "The legalization of industrial hemp could increase production of marijuana," end quote. Lawmakers this session heard testimony from authorities in Canada, where hemp cultivation is legal, who said they have no trouble distinguishing the plants. That testimony was compelling enough for Representative Jim McNeil, a Rutland Town Republican on the House Agriculture Committee that drafted the original bill. Hemp, grown legally in every industrialized country except the United States, reaps attractive profit margins for some farmers. Hemp oil, derived from seeds, is used in food and beauty products. Hemp's long stalks contain fiber and cellulose that can be made into textiles, building materials, and fuel. Now the bad news, contained in Section 3 of the new law. This act shall take effect upon passage at such time as the United States Congress amends the definition of marijuana for the purposes of the Controlled Substances Act. The governor was ready to veto this bill, but realized that it would, in his words, do nothing, and decided it wasn't even important enough to veto. The public safety commissioner, by the way, should really take a look at hemp and marijuana plants someday. Hemp plants are tall and reedy, up to 16 feet tall and kind of dry, whereas consumer cannabis is grown short and bushy with big, fat, wet, sticky buds. It's like telling me you can't tell the difference between a Clydesdale and a zebra because they're both horses. Furthermore, someone needs to enroll him in a basic botany class. No grower of consumer cannabis wants to get his precious females anywhere near an industrial hemp plant. When the 8% THC girls get around the 0.5% THC boys, you end up with both lousy pot and lousy hemp. Haley, Idaho approves 3 out of 4 marijuana measures again. From the Idaho Mountain Express. New election, same results. 3 of 4 proposed marijuana reform initiatives were approved by Haley's electorate Tuesday. Voters approved initiatives to legalize medical use of marijuana by a margin of 417 to 296, to legalize industrial hemp by 403 to 308, and to make enforcement of marijuana laws the lowest police priority in the city by a margin of 381 to 331. Turned down once again was an initiative to require the city to regulate and tax distribution of the drug. It failed 386 to 323. Pro-marijuana advocate Ryan Davidson, a former Bellevue man who now lives in Garden City, filed petitions to place the initiatives before voters once again after Haley's city officials threatened to file a lawsuit to have the 3 previously approved initiatives declared illegal in court. That lawsuit was filed earlier this month in Blaine County 5th District Court. Davidson, chairman of the Liberty Lobby of Idaho, said passage again of the initiatives would make it politically less viable for the city of Haley to ignore the will of the electorate. Prior to the election, neither Davidson nor city officials were willing to predict the outcome, though Davidson said, "I think it's going to be close to the same percentages as last time." Well, from the November 07 election, medical marijuana got 53%,
Industrial hemp got 53%, lowest priority got 51%, and tax and regulate got 47%. Now, in this election, in May of 2008, medical marijuana got 58%, a rise of 5%. Industrial hemp got 57%, a rise of 4%. Lowest priority got 54%, a rise of 3%. But tax and regulate went down to 46%, a drop of 1%. Haley City officials, the people are trying to tell you something.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Michigan court. A drug dog sniffing at your door isn't an illegal search. Lansing, Michigan. Police don't need to obtain a search warrant before using dogs to sniff outside a house for drugs, the Michigan Court of Appeals has ruled. The 2-1 decision released Wednesday was a setback for Jeffrey Jones of Detroit, who was charged after a police dog detected drugs inside his home by sniffing outside the front door. Police used that information to obtain a search warrant to enter the residence, where they found marijuana and a gun. A Wayne County judge suppressed the evidence and threw out the case, ruling that the drug sniffing was an illegal search, similar to using a thermal imaging device. The appeals court disagreed. Judges E. Thomas Fitzgerald and William Murphy, citing U.S. Supreme Court cases, said a canine sniff is not a search as defined under Fourth Amendment law. They also said there is no reasonable expectation of privacy at the entrance to property that is open to the public, including the front porch of a home. A dissenting judge said the ruling erodes the privacy protections and the sanctity of the home guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution's Fourth Amendment. First of all, it should be noted that drug-sniffing dogs are incredibly unreliable. Second of all, in American justice, we have the right to question our accusers. How exactly do you question a dog? Another sad erosion of our civil liberties, all in the name of finding out if people are growing a plant in the privacy of their own home. A home our founders once believed was a man's castle. We've grown accustomed to cameras in every public venue, numerous compulsory demands for our social security numbers, and terabytes of personal data instantly accessible on the internet. Now, even our homes aren't safe from olfactory intrusion by dogs, thermal imaging, sonic imaging that sees right through our walls, and helicopters surveilling our property. I don't think that's what they meant by the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Canadian medical marijuana patients banned from entering the U.S. In a nutshell, the situation is this. If you're a legal Canadian medical marijuana patient and you admit to that fact to U.S. Customs at the border, you are classified as an illegal drug user and permanently banned from entering the United States of America. Our government couldn't be bothered to stop most of the 9/11 hijackers who entered our country from Canada, but they're doing a bang-up job of keeping out the MS, AIDS, and cancer patients who prefer herbal remedies to pharmaceutical ones. So if they ask if you've ever tried marijuana or are a medical marijuana patient, if I may borrow a phrase from Nancy Reagan, just say no.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Not your father's pot.
The myth of cannabis potency. One of the most enduring myths about marijuana these days is the idea that today's bud, or skunk for my UK friends, is so much more potent than the grass of the 1960s. Just recently, this myth was used by Barbara Kay of Canada's National Post.
Since then, skunk, as Britons call the hybrid form of cannabis in current usage, has offered users a 25-fold increase in tetrahydrocannabinol.
Oh, gnarly! I'm so wasted!
See, this myth is critical to the drug warrior's message. There are so many parents alive today who enjoyed pot in the 1960s and the 1970s, and they don't recall any of these exaggerated harms of marijuana so often touted by the prohibitionists. They didn't go schizo or become violent or end up homeless because amotivation cost them their jobs, or become psychotic, or suffer loss of fertility. In fact, most of the people of that generation have generally good memories of their use of marijuana.
No, man. This is grass.
You mean marijuana?
Yeah.
So the only way the drug warriors can enlist these aging baby boom parents in the crusade to convince their kids that reefers are the devil's tool is to convince them that today's pot isn't the happy drug that it was in the 60s and 70s, that it is transmogrified into something more harmful than meth, more addictive than cocaine, and more destructive than heroin.
Marijuana is a narcotic, medically and legally. It never did anybody any good and does everybody a lot of harm.
Unfortunately for Barbara Kay, scientists actually measure and study things like the percentage of THC in seized marijuana. And throughout all of these studies, which I've posted on the Stash blog at stash.normal.org, you can see that a 25-fold increase is a huge exaggeration. Now, we don't have data that go back to the 1960s, but if we look at the data from 1975 to 1983, we find that the average THC content hovers around 2-4% for the grass from the past. And in the 2000s, the data shows an average of between 5-8.5%. At best, it would be intellectually honest to say that marijuana's potency may have doubled. Kay and her kind dredge up their numbers by comparing the 0.2% THC leaf samples to the 33.14% sensimilia samples, which would be kind of like saying beer is so much more dangerous now because we drank 3-2 beer in the 1960s and nowadays there's Jaeger shots. Look, if Miss K really wants to be frightened, she should compare the legal synthetic THC product, Marinol, which is 100% pure THC, to the dreaded skunk. I mean, if you start by comparing Marinol to the best sensimilia, then Marinol is 3 times as potent. If you compare it with her baseline leaf samples, then Marinol is 500 times more potent. But of course, potency is irrelevant with respect to THC content. THC makes you high. More potent weed doesn't give you a different or more dangerous high. It just gives you that THC dose in a smaller package. Just like you can get the same buzz on 3.2 beer or get buzzed on Jaeger shots, but you need less Jaeger to get there. And even that's not entirely accurate because alcohol overdose can kill you. Chug 72 ounces of beer and you'll get wasted. Chug 72 ounces of Jaeger and you'll be dead. So it is sadly very easy to misjudge your intoxication because you don't feel the effects of alcohol for 30 to 45 minutes. But with inhaled marijuana, you feel the effects immediately. If you smoke a joint of leaf, you'll puff and puff and puff and puff and puff, and eventually you'll get a little high. However, if you vaporize a kind bud, you'll puff and be quite high immediately. No need to keep puffing. Finally, the effects of the intoxication relative to the potency are important to note. Drink a little, you get relaxed. Drink more, you get outgoing. Drink more, you get obnoxious. Drink more, you get violent. Drink more, you get pukey. Drink enough, and you die. With weed, smoke a little, you get relaxed. Smoke more, you get giggly. Smoke more, you get introspective. Smoke more, you'll get the munchies. Smoke more, you'll get cemented to the couch. And smoke enough, you fall asleep. Look, as Flava Flav once said,
Don't believe the hype.
It's not your father's 1960s marijuana, and that's a good thing, because you'll smoke less of it, saving a little more of your lungs and your paycheck.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org.
All right, time for our musical break. We're welcoming back our favorite BC buds, the Tall Brothers. Today we enjoy another one of their wonderful reefer jazz tunes, Jive Cake Stuffin', to take us into the weekend. The brothers, Thomas and Bill Small, are the core of this legendary Vancouver, British Columbia band. Bill helped launch the British Columbia Compassion Club Society that provides low-cost, high-quality organic medicinal marijuana to anyone with a doctor's prescription. Tom started writing music at the age of 8 and plays all sorts of instruments and has worked as an audio engineer. Both brothers have a long musical resume in different musical genres. Taking their inspiration from 30s and 40s reefer jazz tunes from greats like Cab Calloway, Ella Fitzgerald, and Nat King Cole, the Tall Brothers have a classic jazz sound with a contemporary twist. According to their website, the band's name comes from an old reefer jazz tune called Man with the Jive, where a line exclaims, "Light up, baby, and get real tall." Let's all get real tall this weekend. Now, just visit their MySpace page, we've got a link for it at stash.normal.org, to sample and download this uber-cool music, or visit 420tunes.ca to purchase their amazing CD. Go ahead and buy 2 or 3 copies. It'll be the coolest gift you could give someone this year. This is the Tall Brothers with Jive Cake Stuffin'.
Say, Tom.
Yeah, Bill, what's up?
How about a little puff?
Bad for your health.
Well, how about a little drink then?
Never touch this stuff. I don't drink tequila.
Try Sansomia.
I don't drink bourbon.
Try this Durban.
No thanks, brandy.
High in this candy.
No gin and tonic.
Growing hydroponic.
If you don't like puffing and your situation's rubbing, you can munch the mighty muffin with the Jive Cake Stuffin'. Jive Cake Stuffin', no sense of roughing it. Jive Cake Stuffin', if you're toughing it. Jive Cake Stuffin', no need for puffing it. Jive Cake Stuffin', when you can muffin it. If you don't like puffing and your situation's rubbing, you can munch the mighty muffin with the Jive Cake Stuffin'.
Thank you.
Jobcake stuffing. Jobcake stuffing. Jobcake stuffing. Jobcake stuffing. If you don't like puffing and your situation's rubbing, you can munch the mighty muffin with a jobcake stuffing.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
Stash, it's time to announce the winner in this month's Paths the Stash contest. I asked you to send me your story in 420 words or less about the first time you ever got high. The prize is your own copy of the DVD Totally Baked, autographed by Brian Johnson, the lead singer of AC/DC and executive producer of the film. I received a ton of entries, and thanks to everyone who sent me an email. Our grand prize winner is Tom D. Get yourself a can of soda, Dave said, before we rode our bikes out to the railroad tracks. I watched as he turned the empty can into a pipe, which he then packed. After a quick lesson in how to use it, we both smoked up. I didn't feel anything at first, so we smoked another. Still, I didn't feel much of anything, so we smoked another, and another, and that was all the bud he had. So we left, and I followed him back down the dark, dimly lit street. He was having fun riding all over the street, swerving from one side to the other. Then I heard the sound of a car behind me, so I shouted to him, "Car!" He pulled over to the right, then looked back and said, "There ain't no car." I looked back and realized he was right. Strange. I must have been hearing things. We rode on, and Dave went back to weaving all over the street. Then I heard a car coming up behind us once again. "Car!" I shouted to Dave. He turned around, looked back at me, and said, "Dude, you are so high." As soon as he said that, at that very moment, I realized for the first time, whoa, I am high. Now here's one from our runner-up, Del S. The first time I met Robert, my best friend of 34 years. It was 1974, and I'd lived on my block since it began. We bought the first house on that block 4 years earlier. I was walking down the street and saw my friend Jim calling to me, standing with another guy I didn't know. They were on a trail leading into the woods at the bottom of our street. I was dressed for the times, new white Adidas shoes, new white jeans, and a sweet new blue satin jacket. I was decked out as usual. When I met them at the bottom of the street, we walked into the woods to smoke a joint that Robert had. Jim told me later, Robert told him he didn't want me to smoke it with me because he didn't know me and thought I was a geek. But when I pulled one out, I guess I was cool. In the woods, we were standing on the path next to the slimy drainage ditch running through the woods from the street so we could see anyone coming. The only weed we could get at the time was Colombian head rush weed, kind of like the Mexican today. We made it through the first joint okay, and we were about halfway through the second joint when, after taking a hit, I was passing the joint to Robert, and he seemed to be getting farther away. I had a massive head rush and didn't even hear the splash as I hit the ground and flopped around in the water and slime. I could see everything, but couldn't control or hear anything. When I came up out of the head rush, I was getting up and I was on one knee when it happened again and I went back down again. I reached out my hand for Robert to help me out of the guck, and he just seemed to get farther away as I slowly fell backwards into the muck again, flopping around. As they said, I was doing the chicken. Now, can you imagine how I got to explain to my mom why I would wear my newest, whitest, and nicest clothes to go swimming in a swamp? And finally, our honorable mention, and I'm telling you, this one probably would have won if it was a first-time story, from Steve B. Hi, Russ. I'm a blind person and a medical marijuana advocate in Illinois. This story wasn't my first stoned experience, but it's unquestionably the funniest. I was in Florida spending some vacation time with a friend. We partook of some herb and then we went to the store to get some groceries. Needless to say, we were both nice and stoned. While we were in the store, I forgot for a brief moment that I couldn't see, and I started to run off with the grocery cart. I don't know if there was anyone staring at us, but my friend said, whoa, stop. I didn't run into anything with the cart and I didn't get hurt, but I stopped when she told me to stop. But we both felt like that incident was funny. I've been blind all my life, and that was the only time I can remember actually forgetting I couldn't see. The experience was both awesome and funny, and for that brief moment, I felt no fear.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America, and it's all because of your support. Take some time to join NORML at www.norml.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join NORML today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
Yeah, you got a phone call this morning. Mr. John, you know, like I'm a real big fan of yours, but you have to go to jail.
This could be the bust we've been waiting for.
One half of Cheech and Chong is in a whole lot of trouble.
You may have heard of Cheech and Chong, a comedy duo.
Welcome to Let's Make a No Deal. Hey.
Tommy Chong's internet business might go up in smoke. Federal agents raided the actor, comedians online.
Tommy Chong was sentenced to 9 months in federal prison for selling bongs on the internet. Finally, the terror alert can go back to green.
In here because I made a stupid joke about the bongs being the only weapons of mass destruction that the Bush administration had found. And next thing I know, I'm looking at 9 months.
Thanks for holding.
They must have called like 20 different times trying to contact us.
I got a bummer email that says you guys don't ship to me.
Isn't that entrapment? They've asked you to send it. Isn't that entrapment?
Yeah, but okay. This is America.
Okay. Yeah.
There's no such thing as entrapment anymore.
She was the national U.S. attorney in charge of the task force on drug paraphernalia. So we knew we had problems.
The gas mask bong, you would put the gas mask on your face and then ingest the marijuana. So you can have your hands free.
No, man, it's so fucking weird getting busted for bongs.
Really?
They really got me by surprise with that one. When they raided my house, man, I thought they were looking for dope. I don't know. Anyway, he said, do you have any narcotics in your house? Of course, I'm Tommy Chong.
We're very, very pleased to be sitting here and talking with Tommy Chong, of course, the famous half of Cheech and Chong. And we've got a breaking story that just took place out of Cincinnati, Ohio, and we brought Tommy here to talk a little bit about it. So, Tommy, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Well, the situation here is the bust of Spectrum Labs. Spectrum Labs, of course, is one of these companies that makes drug testing and detoxification products like the Wizinator and other sorts of things like that. But how does this bust fit in with you?
Well, what they did when the feds came in to Spectrum Labs, you know, the SWAT teams, you know, they held five middle-aged ladies that worked there hostage for hours. In fact, one soiled her pants while they were waiting. They wouldn't let her go to the bathroom.
Oh,
and then the only thing they took, or at least as far as I know, they took were the DVDs that Spectrum Labs were holding. The AKA Tommy Chong documentary.
Now, this documentary, AKA Tommy Chong, and of course people can get a copy of it at the website, akatommychong.com. This chronicles your case with Operation Pipe Dreams, right?
Yeah. It was the story of the whole Operation Pipe Dreams bust, you know, before I went in jail, during the time in jail, and then after.
So this bust was, you know, taking place from the Western District, Pennsylvania, and a certain prosecutor named Mary Beth Buchanan. And how did they manage to bust you for this situation?
Well, you mean the original bust?
Yeah.
Well, what it was, it was my son's company. My son Paris had a glass company, and they were shipping bongs, you know, to different areas across America. And we're paying our taxes, and, you know, it was totally legitimate, you know. And there's a law that, a little-known law that Joseph Biden, by the way, put in. It was a paraphernalia law that made it illegal to ship any kind of paraphernalia, drug paraphernalia, across the state line. And so they used that law to take down my son's company. And the way they did it, they had to do an undercover head shop in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. And then we wouldn't send it to them, you know, because we knew better. But they persisted, and then I think they put an undercover agent into our shop, and then they finally had their shipment. And the feds told me later it was just in time, you know, they're running out of time. They spent $12 million in trapping us to send a bong to Pennsylvania. And so the film, a.k.a. Tommy Chong, is about that bust. And the prosecutor was a lady named Mary Beth Buchanan. And she headed the task force, you know, and she prosecuted me personally when I went to, first of all, I pled guilty, and then they sentenced me on 9/11, 03. You know, a little message there. And then they had the trial or the sentencing in a big courtroom. So, you know, they were expecting a lot of protesters, but only one guy showed up with a little cardboard free marijuana sign. and that was it. So I went to jail for 9 months, but we filmed it all. And then she had the judge stipulate that I cannot profit from my crime. In other words, I would not be able to make a film or do anything like that about the crime. But, you know, my friend Josh Gilbert made it. And so him and Matt Stevens, they were distributing it. And then the cops just recently, 2 days ago, raided the Spectrum Labs and confiscated the film.
Now, Josh Gilbert is the director of the film, and Matt Stevens is the owner of Spectrum Labs out there. And I got some emails from them talking about the bust and how everyone was quite shocked. So is there any indication from the federal authorities here as to the reasoning behind the bust? Was it specifically to get the DVDs, or are they trying to cloak this in the whole, you know, busting them for the Wizenators?
Well, there again, you know, Matt Stevens has been operating openly for many, many years. Since the 90s, you know, and so he's been in daily contact with the local authorities, and so he was totally in compliance with the law. I think it was just a cheap way for the government, namely Mary Beth Buchanan, to try to hurt us financially, you know. Have to have Matt answer, you know, whatever indictment they hand down. But it was just a very thinly disguised attempt to stop us from, or at least to hinder us, selling the DVDs, you know, the way she, you know, the way they confiscated the stock. This is what they're doing, by the way, to the medical marijuana people around the country. The feds are coming in and they're raiding the place like bandits. And they take the people's product and the money, whatever cash they can get, and whatever else they can lay their hands on, and then they leave. And then they don't really prosecute. They just say it's an ongoing investigation. And they got that little loophole in their investigation thing, you know, where they can take anything and seal it, and then seal indictment, and then they don't have to tell you anything or give you any reason, and it can go on forever, and then they can quietly drop it if they feel that there's not enough evidence, and you're out all that money. So that's what's going on.
Right. I was speaking to a medical marijuana attorney in Seattle, Washington, just yesterday, Douglas Hyatt. He was the man who defended that patient up in Washington who died waiting for a liver transplant. They wouldn't give him a liver because he was on medical marijuana. And one of his statements that he says among criminal defense attorneys is that the process is the punishment. The getting you in the criminal justice system, even if you're found innocent, just taking your time and taking your money to go through all these court cases, that is the punishment.
Well, yeah. And that's the total abuse of the system.
Yeah, now this Mary Beth Buchanan, this prosecutor, this U.S. attorney, so she was behind the Operation Pipe Dreams and she was behind the Spectrum Labs bust, right?
Yes.
So does she figure prominently in the movie, a.k.a. Tommy Chong?
Yes, she does. She does. She gets the biggest laugh in the movie.
Oh, wow. So politically motivated, to say the least, you would think here.
Oh, totally. Totally. Well, not so much politically, but personally motivated.
Hmm.
You know, because she doesn't have have a career. You know, as soon as Bush is gone, I'm quite sure she'll be facing criminal indictments herself, because she was the one that was in those lawyers being fired for no reason.
Yeah, well, we definitely can hope for that. And
oh,
we'll...
yeah, there's a lot of, the chickens are coming home to roost, as they say.
Yeah, and this is just one of many documentaries that are out recently. American Drug War is another one that just came out, and it seems like more and more people are getting the truth about the drug war in general and about marijuana in particular. And the government now, it looks like that they're just, you know, reduced to some desperate, you know, last measures to try to enforce their own propaganda.
Well, yeah, exactly. To me, it's like the thrashing of the dinosaur tails as they sink into the stinkhole, you know. they're going to be extinct, and this is what happens. And see, whenever they do that, like for instance the documentary, you know, the documentary was doing okay, but now it's going to go through the roof, you know, for sales, because people, this is the documentary that the government doesn't want you to see.
Well, I guess it's kind of apropos, you know, when you take a look at the way the government has persecuted this war on drugs, where we've got, you know, triple the heroin and double the cocaine on our streets. You know, they try to prohibit something, it just makes people want more of it.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
Now, just looking to some more happy news here in the land of Tommy Chong, what is going on for you career-wise right now? I know you're out performing your stand-up. Are there any movies coming up in the future or more television appearances?
Well, we're just clipping along, you know, doing the... We got a lot of gigs, you know, doing stand-up. I've been working on a... I'm the voice and the main character of a comic strip called Master Kush. K-U-S-H.
Okay.
And you can go on MasterKush.com and check it out.
And one
and, we're in the process of working on a feature film deal with the animated character.
Well, that sounds good. And of course,
Master Kush and Sister Sativa.
Okay, very good, very good. Yeah. And one of the questions that always has to get asked here, and it's been a long-standing rumor, as to whether or not there'd be any future reunions of the Cheech and Chong comedy team, perhaps in a movie.
Well, we're talking again. That's one good thing. We had a 420 reunion at a movie house when they screened Up in Smoke.
Oh, good.
And Cheech was there, and he was very cordial to me, and you know, he's nice. He's not swearing at me anymore. so
that's a positive step, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a positive step, and you know, it looks good. We're not. I'm not going to make any announcements until you know it's actually happening, but it's in the works for sure.
Well, I would think, you know, with the recent success of so many marijuana-themed movies, the Harold and Kumar series, for example, I mean, the public would be just aching for that. I'm sure you guys would make a mint if there was a new Tommy Chong and Cheech movie.
Yeah, I have no doubt whatsoever, you know, that we would be doing very well.
All right. And, you know, looking back to your time in prison, you know, we're talking about this Operation Pipe Dreams, you spent 9 months in a federal correctional facility. What were some of the lessons that you took out of that, you know, being within the system like that?
Well, it was a life-changing event for me. You know, first of all, I had to get reach into my spiritual bag. You know, that I'd always had with me, but I never really went there. You know, when you're a successful movie actor, you're kind of busy with the fame and the fortune. But it slowed me down enough to make me realize, you know, what's really important in life. And then I utilized the time to read a lot. And then I also wrote a book, you know, The I Chong. I wrote that in prison. And even the... documentary, aka there's a film clip of me or a news clip of me talking about, you know, jail, and I said, well, you know, who's to say that jail's a bad thing? You know, you go to jail, you write a great book, you know. That's exactly what I did, and I was talking about that back in the 70s. So The prison thing really was, I would say without a doubt, without hesitation, that it was the single most important thing that's happened to me, to my life.
I imagine that being Tommy Chong in a prison might be a little bit of a different experience than just your average Joe Schmo in prison, though. The prisoners treat you good?
It was thrilling. You know, there were other celebrities in there, but they didn't want to be known. You know, they were in there for, you know, different offenses that they didn't want, you know, a lot of sports figures and so on, you know, that were in there. But they're hiding it, you know. They just went on vacation for a while. But I was a high profile, and so I had a lot of fans. I had the guards, you know. Guards were under orders not to associate with me or to take pictures with me or to treat me any different, but they did. I really made a lot of friends. I made a lot of lasting, you know, lifetime friendship. And it was a positive, great, I enjoyed it. I'll tell you the truth, I had one bad half hour when I first went in there, you know, when I went to bed that night. You know, I went from a big, nice home in the Palisades to a little jail bed, little cot. And that was the worst half hour. It was just a half hour. It lasted a half hour, and then the spirit came into me, and I've been fine ever since.
Was there anyone there that gave you any sort of trouble? Was there any Sergeant Stadenkos in the crowd?
There was one. He was Cambodian guard. In fact, I forget his name now. It's funny, but he was kind of mean. He was a pervert, you know, and he had hit on my wife and all the women, you know. He was kind of a sleaze bag. You know, and you get an idea what it would have been like if you're in jail over there, you know.
Yeah.
And so, he was the only guy. All the rest, no problem.
Wow. So just to wrap things up here just a little bit, again, we're speaking with Tommy Chong, of course, and just looking at the overall philosophy here of our federal government, we've been, you know, 37 years into this war on drugs, and regardless of whether we have Republicans or Democrats in office, we continue to see the escalation. I always point out to people that, you know, Bill Clinton locked up more potheads than any other president. And what do you see as the end game here? Do you feel optimistic about our chances to end this drug war or have some positive reforms, at least within my lifetime?
Well, you got to remember, you're up against greedy capitalists. You know, you're up against imperialists. You know, people, in fact, they make King Midas. They're the King Midas of the world, you know, where everything they touch turns to gold. And the only trouble is when they touch food, it turns to gold. When they touch your kids, everything turns to gold. In other words, they're destroying themselves. And the truth is that we're in a society of yin and yang, you know, conflict. You need, like, every good drama needs conflict. And so, the saving grace of all this is the Constitution was written by potheads, people that were stoned on pot. They wrote it on pot, and it is upheld. It's survived everybody. It survived Nixon. It's surviving George Bush. It's going to turn and bite George Bush on the butt. So what we're doing is we're shaking our Constitution. It's a tree, and we're shaking it and shaking it and shaking it, and it just withstands and is stronger than anything that you can throw at it, you know. And so the greed factor will eventually give way to the common sense factor. And so the drug laws, and what the drug laws have done, by the way, you know, the potheads that are in prison, they're the ones that are writing books, they're the ones that are making the prisons work well. They're going on with their life. They're like Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela did 27 years in prison, came out to be the premier of the leader of South Africa. That's what's going to happen to America. You know, there's some brilliant potheads that are being locked up that are going to come out, and they have. And by the way, if it wasn't for pot, we wouldn't have computers.
How's that work out?
It's all good. It's all good, and all the bad is temporary, and that's what I learned in prison, and that's what people have to, you know, keep in their heart, is that this Constitution, America, is stronger than the evil bastards that are trying to bring it down.
Wow, that's a beautiful sentiment, and I think we should go out on that one. And Tommy Chong, thanks for joining us on the Daily Audio Stash. What is the one thing that our listeners can do to help you out at this point with this whole Spectrum Labs bust and the AKA Tommy Chong movie?
What they can do is get on akatommychong.com and purchase the DVD, AKA Tommy Chong, and then have their friends do the same thing. And if everybody buys a copy, then we'll be like Barack Obama. You know, we'll be able to get a little contribution from everybody that listens, and then we'll use that money to make other product eventually make pot not only legal, but eventually it'll be mandatory.
Well, we can hope so. Tommy Chong, thank you so much for joining us on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another cannabis quote, this one from John Stuart Mill, quote, that the only purpose for which power can rightfully be exercised over any member of a civilized community against his will is to prevent harm to others. His own good, either physical or moral, is not sufficient warrant. End quote. Well, here at Normal, we completely agree, and one of the big problems in trying to get cannabis re-legalized is the moral question about it. How many people think it's just wrong? And that's why we're here, bringing you the news and information and the real science behind cannabis so that we can change hearts and minds. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.